go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Confess, I was a little bit late in pressing all the magic buttons. I got wrapped up in reading the memo. You know what? That memo. That memo reads like it was written by a lawyer who was so bad that he got bench slapped by some random federal judge down in Texas. That's how bad that memo was. I mean, that was some serious first semester of 1L. Legal analysis there. I presume everybody's read it. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and HeadOn.live are where we live. It is the second day of February 2018. That means it is Imbolc. I bet you thought I was going to say Groundhog Day, didn't you? But, well, okay, it's that too. Fascinating history. Fascinating history to all of that. I love the opportunity to learn new stuff, like the fact that Groundhog Day was created by the Pennsylvania Dutch, who aren't Dutch, but of course they're German, because Americans couldn't pronounce Deutsch and understood that was German. And that and there's this, you know, Catholic holiday called Candlemas that happens on February the 2nd. And like all Christian holidays that originated with the Holy Mother Church, it was an overlay on top of an older pagan tradition. In the Celtic tradition, it's Imbolc. And you know how last night we were talking about how it's hard to deal with the R in February? Well, it is. But it wasn't just hard for us, it was hard for the ancient Romans. Because February is named after a Roman goddess or a manifestation of Juno, wife of, spouse of Jove, Jupiter. You know Februa. You know Februa. Yeah, just down the street now. And so Februa is related to Latin words meaning to purge or to cleanse. And in given where Rome is, you'd begin to, this is the time of year that you would begin to see the first burstings of little hints of spring, and the ewes would begin to lactate to feed their little lambs, and apparently it's an Imbolc tradition. Everybody have some ice cream today. I know it's cold outside in some parts of the country, but still You gotta keep up with these ancient traditions, just, you know, because you're a human on planet Earth. You eat ice cream on Imbolc, or maybe yogurt, or have a glass of milk, or some half and half in your coffee, or something, because you celebrate the coming of spring, and the lambing season, and the lactation of the ewes. No, really, I'm not kidding. That's for real. Imbolc. So, yeah. Cheers to yous. See what I did there? Yeah. But Februa, Ovid thought it was an Etruscan word. It may be Sabine in nature, but yeah. Febrile and fever may also be related to the same concept. And I thought it was interesting that Februa is related to the concept of purging, because we have a president who is engaged in trying to purge our government of his personal enemies. Yeah. That's just darling, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, Februa and Groundhog Day. But the Germans added on to Candlemas by saying that if the badger saw his shadow, it meant four more weeks of winter, because we don't have quite the same weather patterns here as there. And the German word for badger is Dachs, D-A-C-H-S, Dachs. So now we understand what a Dachshund is. It's a badger dog. It's a little dog that can get into the little tiny hole, creepy, crawly spaces where badgers like to live, and is ferocious enough to take on a badger. Yeah, those cute little animals we call wiener dogs are actually fierce, ferocious rodent hunters. They are Dachshunds. But there weren't any Dachs in Pennsylvania when the religious refugees arrived here with skills, no skills, chain migration, that kind of thing. I mean, there were just boatloads, literally, of Germans who came over and were refugees from religious persecution. And we know them today as the Amish and the Mennonites, offshoots of the Anabaptists. But they didn't have any Dachs, but they saw these big critters out in the fields, and they sort of just decided that they would be a stand-in for the Dachs, and they called them Grunsaus, Grunsau, ground sow, ground pig, or the fact that you can whistle at them and they'll stand up and then you shoot them, whistle pigs, and thus groundhogs and Groundhog Day. I learned all that today, and I'm just going to add it to some little collection of neurons up in my noggin and let them stay there for as long as they'd like to, frankly. Yeah. So we have thanks to send out this evening. It is Friday on the Front Porch, this second day of February 2018. Friday on the Front Porch, that means here in about 50 minutes or so, Sparky will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group over on Skype. If you've never participated before, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk on Skype, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk on Skype, and he will then show you the breadcrumb trail and direct your attention to the appropriate corner of the sky wherein will be lighted the Bob signal. Yes. Yeah, that godforsaken little rodent apparently saw his shadow. I don't know how on an overcast day, but, well, I figure the Groundhog Day Society up there on Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney, we're just, betting with the season. This is the halfway mark between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. And so, consequently, it's a pretty solid bet that we've got six more weeks of winter. 4 weeks of February, and a couple of weeks of March. And that works out to pretty much the vernal equinox, which around here, you can still... And it's cold. It's cold. This is one of those... this is going to be one of those rather unpleasant evenings in the studio, because it's like 8 outside. We're having a cold snap again, after having it be like 60 degrees a day and a half ago. Because, weather systems on planet Earth aren't out of whack or anything. Oh, no. Mm-mm. No. Everything's all good here. All good. But we have thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly. Thanks go out to Albert there in North Carolina. Thank you, Albert. And thanks go out to Elizabeth in New York. Thank you, Elizabeth, for remaining a sponsor of these non-commercial horn broadcasts. And thank you very kindly to Darren out in Huntington Beach. Thank you, Darren. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thank you, all of you, for your subscriptions. And just a reminder, the more people that subscribe, the more fundraising-free days we have at the end of the month, potentially. So we've got three subscribers on the second day of the month. If you'd like to set it and forget it, just check the little box there in the PayPal interface, and you'll be off and running. The PayPal interface is available both at headon.live and headonradionetwork.com. Now, we'll try to raise $200 this evening. We've got to do that every evening between now and like 3 weeks into the month if we're going to have some fundraising free radio, which I really look forward to. We've done it for 2 months running, and it's become my favorite part of the month, just being able to fire up the program, get going, and not have to talk about this. So 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and of course it's actually 12 and a half cents, but we round up that half a penny to put toward my 2018 Porsche Carrera 4 Targa. Mm-hmm. And the garage. The garage is going to be huge one of these days. Absolutely freaking huge. Good question. Earther asks early on, how does one know that a groundhog is contemplating his shadow and not looking at almost anything else? I would say that's probably a function of like the patriarchy or something. Or the anthropomorpharchy. Now there's a goddamn word. Write that one down and save it for the New York Times Sunday crossword. Anthropomorpharchy. Anthropomorphacy. You use that little bastard in Scrabble and you win. It's just over. Anthropomorpharchy. Yes. Hopefully we'll finish out the week and we'll finish the first 2 days of February to the good. And we'll be off and running. And we'll have to do a little if we're going to have fundraising free days at the end of the month, we'll have to do a little tweaking of the daily fundraising goal next week, because a reminder, I will be gone. The plane leaves Charleston at 7 a.m., which means I got to leave here. I'd have to leave here at like 4. So I'll probably take Wednesday as well and just go down and spend the night in a Super 8 or something and hope that I don't get, that Ferg and I don't get slaughtered by meth heads or something. So that means Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the 14th, 15th, and 16th, and then the 19th, because I couldn't get a return flight home before 4:50 p.m. And since you got to go through Atlanta both ways, we get home at about 11 p.m. Monday night. So Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Mondays programs of the second and third weeks of February, out. Jim sent me a note saying, you should really broadcast the horn in. No. There's not going to be any live broadcast or anything, simply because it would cost extra money to haul up the rig, all the computers and the mixed desk and the wires and the cables and the microphones and the... No, there will be no broadcast of the horn in, which, again, if you're interested and you're in the New York area, send me a note, please. BobKincaid@gmail.com. And I will, that way I can have a running idea of how many folks we're going to have show up and pick pick an appropriate forum or an appropriate venue for it as a result. Okay, so that takes care of. Oh, by the way, the mailing address. If you want to participate by mail in helping keep the program on the air, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P PMB318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. 25801. All checks, money orders payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. Boss Man Wayne deals with all of that stuff. Randy says, you should have driven to someplace like Virginia Beach to get a flight directly to New York City. Randy, it's 8 hours to Virginia Beach, buddy. Driving. 6 to 8 hours to Virginia Beach. And it's also 8 hours to drive from here to New York City. So it really doesn't, I mean, I'm no mathematician, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't make much difference. No. Could have driven to New York, but no. I don't want to try to park in New York. The horror. So we'll get to New York on Thursday afternoon. Meet up with some folks, and we've got some stuff planned from there on. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, New York in February is not exactly the best time to be in New York, but it's New York. It is La Grande Pomme. Der große Apfel. Yeah? And I admit I'm a little bit excited. Well, with tempered, my excitement is tempered by virtue of the trailers that I've seen. I have a sneaking suspicion the producers, the directors, and the writers have completely screwed up a wonderful science fiction novel. But I'll be watching episode one tonight of Altered Carbon. I hope they did it justice. I have a feeling they didn't. But you know what? Who reads books in America? I mean, the chances of those of us, chances are those of us who actually read the book, we're gonna see it and we're gonna go, ah, really? And everybody else will see it and go, this is the coolest science fiction show I have ever seen. Because again, who reads books in Merca?
The greatest country in the history of the world on earth today in the universe forever under God.
Right. No, we can't. Believe me, I'll be visiting Katz's Deli, but we can't have our horn in there. I don't think they would take too kindly to it. It's not only famous, it's delicious. The garlic sausage, my goodness gracious, it's so good. And, you know, the corned beef, the pastrami, the matzo balls in the matzo ball soup. The matzo balls are the size of baseballs, and you get one in the matzo ball soup. It's matzo ball soup. A little bit of soup, bowl, baseball. Matzo ball soup. So, we've got all the preliminaries and everything taken care of. Yes, Randy, I do know what a hexafoose is. There are some people down here who use hex signs on barns. Mm-hmm. Scott and Punky pointing out, subject line, the groundhog's shadow. He's not looking for the presence or non-presence of his shadow. He's looking at the group of badly hammered guys in top hats freezing their asses off and wondering, how the fuck did I get rooked into this nonsense? Probably true. Marty says, I still want to know how Phil lets the elders know whether he sees his shadow or not. Building on what Scott and Punky said, I think alcohol is involved. Did those Germans bring over their schnapps tradition? If they did, alcohol is most certainly involved. So, anyway, at 21 minutes past the hour, we got stuff to talk about this evening. Hopefully we'll have a rousing Jim Dandy good Friday on the Front Porch discussion, because There is stuff, a lot of stuff. Oh my God, the end of the world memo has been released. We've got that. We've got a little drama at the sentencing of Dr. Skeevy Pervert, I mean Larry Nassar. And I've got a feeling that Sparky in the chat room there is bursting with pride because the guy was wearing his IBEW sweatshirt today when he tried to get close enough to Larry Nassar to, you know, squeeze the life out of him. Yeah, I saw that great seal of the IBEW, and I thought, this is probably not a guy to fuck with. So there's, you know, no, we've got an abundance of stuff, and you know, not just Trumpy stuff, newsy stuff, other, well, stuff that has to do with Trump, but doesn't have to, well, that isn't, you know, right there in the now disgraced White House. But before we do any of that, we also have This Day in Horn History. For today's special edition of This Day in Horn History, we've dusted off Emmett Brown's DeLorean, charged up its flux capacitor, and dialed it back 410 million seconds, all the way back to February the 2nd, 2005. Yes, yes, February 2nd, 2005 falls on a Wednesday. Bob opens this prayer meeting Wednesday, Groundhog Day program, telling that old tired joke where Jesus comes out 3 days after he's locked into a cave, looks around and yelps six more weeks while crawling back into the cave. Bob, of course, promises not to tell that joke ever again, but that promise will soon be broken in an upcoming edition of This Day in Horn History. From a historical horn perspective, prayer meeting Wednesday wasn't a reality until Bob moved to an internet-only format. February 2nd, 2005 is significant in two ways. First, it's the one-year anniversary of the program. Head On with Bob Kincaid is officially 1 year old in its terrestrial radio format on February 2nd, 2005. West Virginia's only live nighttime talker who was run off terrestrial radio for having too small a vocabulary. Apologies, inside baseball. Second, W is set to deliver his 2005 State of the Union address, a State of the Union speech in which that raging commie W references the need for prosecuting corporate criminals. True story. Bob can't resist the snark. President Pinhead is going to read off the teleprompter tonight. That's what I love, being read to by an illiterate. On this day, Fidel Castro has announced that he has watched W's second inauguration speech and believes that the man is deranged. One wonders how loudly poor, forlorn Fidel would have screamed had he stuck around long enough to see a real deranged president give his American Carnage inauguration speech. Of historical note is also the fact that 13 years ago this upcoming weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles were squaring off against the Patriots, as they're doing again in 2 days' time. Unfortunately for Barbecue Todd, the Eagles lost that game 13 years ago, and chances are that history will repeat itself here in 2 days. Sorry, Barbecue Todd, I'm sure most of us Hornedanistas are rooting for the Trumpanzee team to lose, which ain't the Eagles. And that was a brief ride on board Emmett Brown's DeLorean time machine looking 13 years into horn antiquity, all the way back to February 2nd, 2005, for This Day in Horn History. And, of course, because Asa had to go and give the punchline, that means I can't tell the world's only Groundhog Day joke. Damn it. Thanks for helping, Brother Deacon Asa. I've got a photo to look at after the program, courtesy of Hung Like Jesus, and I will. Whenever you get a photograph of the back of a beat-up pickup truck from Georgia, you know it's just going to say some really, really nifty stuff. Yeah, I will. I'll save it for after the program. You know, you just are you just trying to break my heart, Asa? You should really use this opportunity to dine at Trump Grill in New York City. Perhaps you can even hold your horn in at Trump Grill. Well, no, because I don't have any particular hankerings for E. coli 157H7 or salmonella or plague or any of the other disgusting things. Oh, my God, that restaurant. What a cesspit. Although, I don't know. Would it be beneficial to... Is that a thing now? Tourists go to New York so they can stand in front of the Trump Tower and flip it off? Might have to get that photograph taken. That's one for the ages. Yes, indeed. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh, subject line, North Carolina groundhog. Hey, Bob, we have our own weather-predicting rodent here in North Carolina. His name is Sir Walter Wally. Sir Walter has predicted 6 more weeks of winter. Wouldn't you like to work one day a year? Yeah, but those other 364, what's he doing? Probably just dodging cars on I-70, I-77, wouldn't you spec? One day a year. But it's like a turning point. From here, February's a short month. Black History Month, by the way. I used to think that February was Black History Month because it's only natural that the United States would designate the shortest month in the year as Black History Month. But actually, it has to do with the man who was behind the creation of it, a brilliant African American hillbilly by the name of Carter Woodson. You can read up on him. In fact, he worked in the coal mines right here around near where I live and went on to become a brilliant academic, proof positive of the brilliance, the intelligence, the potential that has been squandered for over a century in Appalachia. Because hillbillies were deemed to be good for nothing better than rooting around in the bowels of the earth and having more than 100,000 of them die as a result of doing so. VT Blom in the chat room. Is it 3/5 of a month, Bob? You know, it might be worth doing the math. But I'll tell you, I saw the, and I presume everybody has seen the video by now. There's really not a lot of audio to it, just the man standing up and asking the judge to give him 5 minutes alone in a locked room with Larry Nassar. He is the father of 3 daughters who were all sexually molested by Larry Nassar. And by the time they're done counting up Larry Nassar's victims, may well reach into the thousands. I mean, this is on an almost incomprehensible scope. He's not like one, he is one. He's a serial criminal who had the full weight and support of the American, the Michigan State University medical infrastructure behind him. If you take a moment and you think about how many patients a doctor can see in a day, and you understand that Larry Nassar was not some general practitioner sawbones. He wasn't giving little boys a bottle of Coca-Cola because they'd been sampling their daddy's chaw again. He was in fact, the foremost, deemed to be the foremost authority on women's sports medicine, possibly in the country. And the whole time, he was operating with the mindset and the motivations of a rapist. And if you read into the journalism that's been done around the Larry Nassar scandal, what you'll find is a similarity of accounts among women, girls, young women who didn't even know each other, had never heard of each other. And it's always the same MO. And he held himself out as going where no man has gone before, and held himself out as an expert in women's pelvic area medicine, and claimed that he could massage the pelvic floor and cure stuff. And the sickening part of all of this is that there were warning signs. Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics, utilizing a standard in the law known as knew or should have known, had reason to be concerned. One young woman, our friend Joy, directed my attention to this story. One young woman, actually a student at Michigan State University, went to him for treatment and came away feeling pretty well sexually molested and went and tried to file a complaint inside the school infrastructure. And her complaint was dismissed, saying that, Dr. Nassar didn't have any sexual intent, so it can't be sexual harassment under Title IX. But then they sent her a different final report than they sent him. And the final report they sent him indicated that they had some real misgivings about the way that he was going about his business. And, of course, all of this ties into capitalism. It always does. Because Larry Nassar was part of an organization whose purpose was garnering wealth off the backs of little girls who are referred to as women for purposes of Olympic-level sporting events. And so it was today, after a previous sentencing hearing, another sentencing hearing was held. And a man stood up and asked to address the court, and was given permission so to do by the presiding judge. He then referred to Nassar as that son of a bitch, and the judge immediately interrupted him and said, "We're not going to use that kind of language in this courtroom. We don't talk like that in this court." Oh, yes, ma'am. And then he moved to asking, just straight up asked, "Could I have 5 minutes in a locked room with him?" "Well, you know, I can't do that, sir." At which point he said something, and then he took off trying to get to the convicted criminal Larry Nassar. and was immediately tackled by three big burly bailiffs who held him down to the ground, and the audio, you could hear it. Easy there, buddy. Easy, easy. As if they're trying to calm down some sort of spooked horse. Easy, easy. And I watched it, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off. But it got under my skin because immediately the prosecutor addressed the crowd, and she said, "We can't let him have this power over us. I understand your frustration," she said. No, ma'am, you didn't, and you don't. I despise it when people in positions of power, and I don't care. I don't care the politics of it. I don't give a shit. "I feel your pain." Bullshit. "Well, we just wanted to show up at this beautiful island of Puerto Rico to show our support. We know how bad it is." No, you don't. Shut the fuck up. Those are hollow words. "I understand your frustration." Madam Prosecutor, that man wasn't frustrated. That man was straight up 200 proof, pissed off to the point of murder. Just because he wasn't all purple in the face and screaming didn't mean that he wasn't experiencing pure, unmitigated rage. Because his three daughters had been molested by a person in a profession that society entrusts with the ability to deal with the most intimate of physical interactions. And along the way, made him a wealthy man in exchange for it. As Hung Like Jesus points out, imagine the guilt those parents felt after finding out this demon seed was violating their children. Oh, yeah. Parents look at each other and said, "What could we have done differently?" And see, the reason there were separate sentencing is because he was molesting girls all over the state of Michigan. Because various gymnastics clubs would send their injured athletes to him. And this particular man, his daughters had been in one of those gymnastics clubs. And I'll remind us that at the very apex of that sport are the Olympic gymnasts, and when they tried to speak out about what Larry Nassar had done to them, USA Gymnastics said, "Well, you know, if you do that, we're gonna have to fine you $100,000 for breaking the non-disclosure agreement." Why? Because USA Gymnastics had a non-disclosure agreement in case they got sexually molested by the physician in the pay of USA Gymnastics? Really? There's a non-disclosure agreement for that? You gotta wonder about the lawyer who wrote that one. And it was only through a process of public shaming that the USA Gymnastics backed off of that odious and unforgivable position. And that's an interesting thing I hadn't thought about. Brother Deacon Asa points out, anybody notice how the good white Christians are not defending this rapist like they did Roy Tola Moore? Reckon it's because he's got one of them Arab names, Nassar, yeah? It's worth considering. Meanwhile, Steve in New York points says, I don't have kids, so I may very well be out of line. However, more than the physical harm that monster caused, he stole the childhood of all those girls. Child innocence is unrecoverable. Once it's destroyed, it's gone. That innocence is unrecoverable. You know, not to go back to anything, but I know a little bit about that. Firsthand. And I know how it sort of trails after you all your life. And I know how, even though you're a rational being, you wind up asking irrational questions of yourself. And so, yeah, childhood was stolen. But I will add into the mix, and this is not by way of casting blame, but we steal a lot of childhoods in this country. And I really think we ought to take a long, hard look at how and why we do it. You know, there are parents out there, and you generally have to be of some means to be able to pull this off. But there are parents out there who will travel hundreds of miles on a weekend to take their kids to soccer tournaments and baseball tournaments and softball tournaments and spend fortunes sending boys to football camps and girls to gymnastics and cheerleading and softball camps. You might remember that Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian that he is, you might recall that he got all upset because he's pretty sure that softball turns Christian girls into lesbians. And in the process of this, kids get beat up. The young woman who tried to report Larry Nassar at Michigan State University had a career, if you can call it that. She had done high school cheerleading intensively, and by the tender age of 20 years old, was pretty well beaten up. It's easy for us as a nation to watch things like college basketball and college football, and occasionally the camera will pan down the line of the lovely cheerleaders, and they're immaculate, they're perfect, they're exquisitely beautiful, and athletically, in the peak of condition. And we tend to think, oh, well, you know, that's what they do on Saturdays. Well, never mind the Saturdays. How about the Sundays, the Mondays, the Tuesdays, the Wednesdays, the Thursdays, and the Fridays? And it is brutally athletic. And somehow, maybe, and you know, there's the concept of the little league parent. But anybody who's ever been involved with youth athletics knows that it's not made up. It's real. The parents get absolutely beside themselves, crazy over this stuff. But a lot of childhoods get stolen, even when the kids are lucky enough not to be molested by anybody. They get stolen by all the grooming that goes on for the sports. I mean, if you reach the level as a girl, you know, say starting about age 9 and up to 10, 11, into your teen years. That somebody says that you've got potential in tennis or gymnastics or figure skating or softball, it's going to be your life. and parents will move from point A to point B to be near the best training centers. And the kids will be tutored instead of going to school and instead of having what we prefer to think of as a typical kid's life. And the parents are paying for this, and the kid knows it, and in turn, the kid feels a sense of obligation because he or she knows what mommy and dad are laying out for this, and it just piles stress on top of stress on top of stress on top of stress, and a lot of kids just crack. Look at Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show when, what, he was 3-4 years old, sinking putts, and Johnny and the audience were just gobsmacked by it. Earl molded Tiger Woods every day of Tiger's life. And then once he reached adulthood and got out of Stanford, you know, everybody remembers the early professional days of Tiger Woods. He was unbeatable. He was a machine. But then he had to start living an adult's life. And then the wheels started coming off. And so I imagine there are a bunch of parents who are questioning themselves about, you know, whether what they did as parents were right. I hope they're not blaming themselves. They were operating within the parameters of a system and an economy and a culture that says you do these kinds of things to children. Not the sexual molestation part, but the part where you just single-mindedly focus them on whatever, you know, whatever it is that they show a talent for and hope for the best. I mean, Jesus, it happens to kids who are chess geniuses and they wind up living under bridges and all they've got is a chess set and a winter coat sometimes. And then in particular in regard to the altercation today, yeah, a couple of things did pass through my mind. And like I said, I'm not trying to piss anybody off. That's not my goal here. But when I saw the father get tackled, and I noticed that they didn't tase him. They did handcuff him. They eventually handcuffed him. But they, you know, when it comes to being jumped by three big burly deputies, they jumped him as gently as they could because it was as if they understood. And he was looking at the deputies and saying, "What would you do if these were your daughters? What would you do to that guy?" But I couldn't help, because it's America and it's 2018. I couldn't help asking myself if that scenario would have played out the same way had that father been a man of color, had he been African American or Hispanic. Would the taser or the pepper spray have come out? Would it have been used? I don't know. But because it's America, we have to ask ourselves those questions. Because you can't make the assumption that it would have come out exactly the same. And then there's the, like I said, there's the fact that the judge, you know what, he might not have gone after Nassar had the judge just let him stand there and call him a no good serial sexual molesting son of a bitch. But we have idiotic norms that we cling to in this country. Think about what a stir it caused because people on network television actually said shithole when they were quoting the President of the United States. I don't know if things like this provoke thought in you like they do with me. We have, as other people have noted, Todd, for instance, last night. This is one of the most intelligent, most thoughtful, communities of passionate, conversationalists. That one is likely to find. That's probably why we're not on the terrestrial radio. It doesn't go well with things like ads for Super Beats and Bose Wave radios and the lot. We'll be back with more of your trenchant, incisive thoughts there, Fred. But I'm going to put you on hold while we sell people vitamins that aren't going to do a goddamn thing for them. Can you hold? Can you hold, Fred? Sure. Okay, great. No. But in these moments, there are... why do we have this insistence? And it seems to apply to courtrooms and churches, which perhaps isn't that surprising because the idea of courts arose out of, in the Western tradition at least, the church. That's why judges wear black robes, you know, like a priest. Our court system is a secular church. And it applies similar rules. Just like you don't yell fuck in church, you don't yell it in a courtroom either, because both places are spaces in which we pretend that human beings do not behave like human beings. In other words, both institutions are places in which we insist upon perpetuating a fraud. Fraud on the court is a big damn deal. But courts practice frauds on the American people every day that they bang the gavel and call and oh yay the and the bailiff oh yays the court into session. We might actually do better if we acknowledged reality in our court system. If lawyers didn't have to hedge and sort of negotiate around the way that real human beings really speak. If that judge had just sat back and let people speak their piece, it might have been an entirely more peaceful situation. And if that prosecutor, through some level of perceived self-anointed privilege, hadn't lectured the victim, my God, the prosecuting attorney lectured the victims on how she understood their frustration. How much more elitist can you possibly get? Now, there's good news out of this. The presiding judge said that she is not going to punish the man in question for his outburst. That's probably good. And one last thing, and I will leave this to I'll leave this to the women in our community to opine on. Well, I mean, the guys can too. But as I watched it, I couldn't help thinking, to the same extent that I wondered if the circumstances. Or if the outcome would have been different, had the circumstances been different, had the man been a man of color, I wondered another thing, too. Was there a little bit of patriarchy involved in the man wanting to stand up and address the court? He didn't get fingered by Larry Nassar. He didn't get molested by Larry Nassar. He wasn't a victim of Larry Nassar. His daughters were. They were the ones that the court really needed to hear from. Now, this may be a little bit iconoclastic, but don't just dismiss what I'm saying out of hand. I was struck by what looked like a little bit of medievalism in the tableau. I think a lot of us, and I hesitate to use the word understood, but a lot of us were able to sympathize and empathize with the man. And putting ourselves in his shoes, we say we might have done the very same thing. But that is not the same thing as actually analyzing the motivation for the conduct. And as I reflected on it, I couldn't help asking myself, and I ask the community now, if it wasn't just a little medieval. If it wasn't just a little possessory. There was a time in human history when what was done to those three young women would have ruined them for life because their father would never have been able to make an appropriate matrimonial match for them. And made a bargain in which he swapped them because they were his property. That's just straight up human history. And we often behave in ways that are culturally inherited, even though they are not, it's that old saying that history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. The clip was not long enough to know whether the three young women had addressed the court or whether they were later allowed to address the court. But the question is, why were they not heard from first? And if they were heard from, why did he need to be heard from? Again, they were the victims. Of course, we must remember that even unto this day, there are cultures in this world where those three young women would be murdered by their family, by the men in their family, for what the criminal deviant doctor did to them. And it is not limited to one religion. It exists in the Christian past as well. And I try to at least be cognizant of and or be tuned into. To what extent did that thing that happened today happen as a result of sociocultural encoding that goes back, as Albert in Rhode Island points out in an email? Albert says, I read the book Fantasyland. It described how America became so delusional that we elected Dope 45. One of the major reasons was because this nation was founded by puritanical religious fanatics. And as we have observed on numerous occasions on this program, that puritanical religious fanaticism is with us to this day, even among people who don't know it. So I think it's at least worth worth considering. And I'm not claiming I'm right. I'm not saying that it was a manifestation of patriarchy. I am asking if it is possible that there were overtones of it in the transaction. It's not to say the man was wrong, but we act in accordance with things that are ingrained in us from birth. So, you know, just to think about. What else? Some stuff to consider when we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Here's a question. We blew right by a school shooting yesterday, the day before. A little girl brought a gun to school in Los Angeles. It was one of those "the gun just went off" moments. The little girl, her case will be handled in juvenile court. But everybody seems to be in agreement that it was an accident and she didn't have any criminal intent. It was in her bag, the bag fell off her desk, it hit the floor, and the gun just went off. And so it went from a potential school shooting horror story to being one of nothing to see here, move along. Here's a question we can discuss when we fire up the group. How does a 12-year-old girl wind up, even if the shooting was accidental, how does she wind up being able to bring a fully functioning loaded handgun to her school? How's that happen? What do you do with a parent who either, negligently, grossly negligently, or willful, wantonly, and recklessly lets that happen? If a parent has a freedom protector laying around the house, unsecured, does that level of recklessness almost rise to the level of intent, of actually intending the outcome? So that's one to discuss. How about a man who served two tours in our illegal war in Afghanistan, came home wrecked with PTSD, couldn't get appropriate medical treatment, couldn't get necessary medications, and eventually wound up getting busted for drugs and did time for it. How about the fact that that man was here on a green card and still joined the United States military and served in our illegal war and did two tours in Afghanistan? And how about the fact that ICE just grabbed him and is getting and is preparing to deport him to a country that he has never known because he was brought here as a child? How about that? How about the fact that it's going to be 50 to 60 degrees warmer than normal at the North Pole this weekend, despite the fact that Tangerine Tiberius has declared it's warmer, or it's there's more ice at the poles than there's ever been. Beautiful, thick, frozen ice. That. How about the fact that we know scientifically, because we've still got a few scientists left who haven't been purged from the government, how about the fact that we know scientifically that little black, brown, and poor white kids breathe more poison just by going to school than anybody else? These are all just things that have run across and caught my attention. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. Who has time? Matt asks. We don't have time to address the gun situation in this country. We're all too busy watching the clown show in D.C. with the memos flying, the daily tweet storms, the fact that no one in that town has done anything about a president who should have been impeached as soon as his hand came off the Bible. There is so much crap being unaddressed because we now all live in Trump land. It's his world, and we just live in it. A larger version of high school with no one in charge. In regard to the Nassar courtroom outburst, Scott and Punky say, what you noted about it was true, and it occurred to me that the incident also served to re-traumatize those young women present this morning who'd already been victimized by Larry Nassar. I like to think we're a little bit different than a lot of radio programs that just snap to judgment. I'm not about offering judgment. I'm about asking questions. I'm about seeking answers. And I think that's what this community is about as well. So like I said, we've got a lot of material for this Friday on the front porch. If you want to participate this evening in the conversation, like I said before, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word. He will accept your friend request and have you into the group lickety-split. Oh, okay, the beat-up truck that hung like Jesus sent the photo of. Decals on the back. I still miss my ex, but my aim is getting better. When I die, bury me face down so the whole world can kiss my ass. Then a decal with a pair of revolvers over a woman's breasts. I love guns and titties. another decal with an extended middle finger. You want attitude? Yeah, hung like Jesus said, check that photo out, Bob, because this is why I sent it. Merca. Hell yeah. All right, so we'll take a break. And when we come back, one of the funnest parts of the week, Friday on the Front Porch. And again, we're starting into a new month, so we need to raise $200 this evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, et cetera, et cetera. We are at present at zero. Yeah, Elbert also says, in regard to the gun case in Los Angeles, you also need to ask why that girl considered that she needed to carry a gun to school. She said she thought it wasn't real. Tamir Rice knew his wasn't real. Yeah. All right. Break time. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
Muskrat, oh muskrat, what makes you smell so bad? Laying around the farmer's house, eating up all he had. Eating up all he had. Eating up all he had, boys, eating up all he had. Muskrat, oh muskrat, I'll track him through the sand. Muskrat, oh muskrat, gonna catch him if I can. Catch him if I can. I'll catch him if I can, boys, I'll catch him if I can. I found out where he's been a-using last night. Muskrat, oh muskrat, catch you sure as you're born. Running around all over the field, eating up all my corn. Eating up all my corn. Eating up all my corn, boys, eating up all my corn. No, don't ever big year eating pine. Muskrat, oh muskrat, I trapped him on the bank. I'll skin him out and stretch his hide and tack it on a plank. I'll tack it on a plank, tack it on a plank, boys, I'll tack it on a plank. Muskrat, oh muskrat, trapped him on the farm. Sell hides when they get dry to keep some pretty gal warm. Keep some pretty gal warm. Keep some pretty gal warm, boys. Keep some pretty gal warm. Muskrat, muskrat, what makes you smell so bad? Laying around the farmer's house, eating up all he had, eating up all he had, eating up all he had, boys, eating up all he had, eating been in the onion patch.
Long distance dedication going out to Larry Muskrat Nasser. Nail your hide to a plank. Well, the fact of the matter is, I was short on songs about groundhogs. So it was that or muskrat love, and I figured there'd probably be a riot in the Horn Family Community Congregation if I'd played either the America or the Captain and Tennille version of that god-awful song. So instead, you know, Doc Watson and Muskrat. All right, let's run over and check in with Sparky, official moderator of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. Happy first day of California spring.
Yeah, rub it in, sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's got about 3 inches of snow on the ground today when I went out. I swear, you know, once you get past four wheels, windshield, headlights, somewhere out there in the far distant future, the next vehicle I own is going to have remote start on it. Ugh, I hate it. I hate a frozen automobile.
Well, I ain't got that problem.
Oh, I know, because it's the first day of freaking spring where you are. Yes.
Yeah, I've already done the first mowing of the North 40. I'm probably going to have to mow it again here, maybe this weekend.
Oh, my God, you're not kidding.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, Jesus.
In a few days, probably all the almond trees will start blooming. It usually happens around the middle of February every year now instead of March.
Well, I was going to say, are the almonds in bloom?
No, it's the first warm day. It has to have a week or two of warmth to set them off.
Well, when I was thinking about what kind of ice cream I wanted for in bulk, the first thing that came to mind was not chocolate or vanilla or even strawberry. First thing came to mind was peach, because the peach blossom. I grew up in a place where, you know, you see the peach blossoms in spring and you know it's really there. And then of course you get one last hard frost and all the blossoms fall off and you don't get any peaches that year, because I'm a little ray of sunshine is what I am. But yeah, peach, absolutely.
I have to drive down the road for that. There's no peach orchards around here. They're a couple miles down the road. They got peaches, plums.
Oh, and I love a white freestone peach. Man, and when we go south, depending on which way we go, you can take one route that'll take you through Clanton County, Alabama. And their county water supply tower is painted up like a giant peach. And if you get there at just the right time of year, you know, those little baseballs you buy in the grocery store can't measure up. When they're ripe off the tree, it's a whole nother level of candy. I guess we're into kind of fruit food porn now, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. My neighbor, a rancher, he just put in a new, brand new orchard. Gave up one of his irrigated pastures. He used to run the cows on in early spring. And he's put in a whole drip system and everything. And the other day they were out there planting. He's drilling the holes, and then Mexicans come along, planted all the trees.
Thank God for Mexicans. We'd starve to death.
Well, they haven't got out of them all here. I mean, they've had a raid in a little town south of here once.
Well, you've got one ICE official out there who is now hollering that he wants to start arresting mayors of sanctuary cities. These Republican bastards really do have a hankering for a civil war.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that the Republican farmers and stuff out here, they're all in the valley. They all count on immigrant labor to harvest their fields.
I've read that there are some places in California where crops are rotten in the fields for lack of labor.
Yeah, and then plus Southern California, several counties, the drought rating just got changed on.
Well, so we're at 4.1%. The big news this morning was that, you know, before all the commotion about the double secret probation memo came out. The big news this morning was that the economy added 200,000 jobs last month, which is not shabby for a January, I guess. But employment's around 4%, which is deemed to be full employment. Okay. All right. So that being the case, who's going to do the jobs?
You're not going to get white people to go out there. I mean, I used to swamp peaches when I was in high school, but the Mexicans picked them. We just put them on a trailer.
Well, I mean, I don't think Trump's going to be able to get a whole bunch of Norwegians to come over here and pick lettuce without any, you know, no health benefits and shitty pay. I just don't see it happening.
No, plus I can't. Hey, they're going through harvesting a lettuce field. Look like romaine lettuce.
Yeah.
And they're chopping it and packing it, and it's come right as they pick it.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about something. Hey. I was actually in the grocery store earlier today. Had a hankering for Reubens, so I needed some rye bread and all the other stuff that goes with Reubens. But I was wondering, as I was walking through the produce section, what would happen if in your Kroger's and your Ralph's and your Walmart's and all the other places that people buy groceries, what would happen in, say, the produce section if there were signs saying, these shelves would be empty if it were not for immigrant labor? Or, hey, do you like this celery? It wouldn't be here without a Mexican. I mean, I'm not trying to single out anybody, but the reality in this country is that our food system runs on immigrant, documented and undocumented labor, period. Because there's not a whole bunch of white folks out there cutting heads of bok choy out of the rich and fertile irrigated soil of God only knows where. Now, granted, the grapes are Chilean right now, so that doesn't really count. But a lot of this stuff can. California is America's breadbasket, and fruit basket, and vegetable basket. I mean, what if every restaurant menu on the salad section said, before you can have a salad, you have to look at your server and say, I'm so glad we have immigrant labor, undocumented and documented, to pick this stuff, or else we won't sell you a salad. What would happen? Now the restaurant.
I don't know. It's like that movie, A Day Without Mexicans.
Well, that's one of those things that I got that made me think about that. Let's run over and check in with the continuing on the mend, Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
What's happening, brother Bob?
Oh, you sound so damn chipper. I'm glad I think you got this thing licked, don't you?
Yeah, getting better every day, my friend. Getting better every day. And I don't want to make the show about me, but last night was the last antibiotic, so I'm doing a happy dance.
Woo!
Yeah, of course, I got some GI tract repairing to do. I was on that crap for 3 weeks. But
yeah, it'll mess with you.
Yeah, it will. But like I said, I don't want to make this show about me. So how's Brother Bob tonight?
Ah, Brother Bob's okay. Brother, it was Friday fish fry up to the Wiggling Pig, and they do fried catfish on Fridays, and I mean they really do. They do a magnificent job. If they had a decent tartar sauce, there wouldn't be any beating it. So lunch was fried catfish, and
I hear you.
I couldn't have bought the catfish fillets and brought them home and fried them for cheaper than what I got out of the hot case up there. But it's not walleye in Wisconsin, but damn it was pretty good. And it wasn't that kind of catfish where you can taste that dirty taste, you know, that mud stripe.
Hey, that right. No, did they marinate it some kind of mustard? That'll usually take that out.
No, this was just sweet and mild, and I don't know how they batter it, but they deep fry it, and whoo wee, oh, it's good.
Well, for culinary cuisine, you're going to one of the best spots on the planet. You know, I used to go there frequently when I lived in Baltimore, and I would always ask myself, who in their right mind would pay $20 for a pastrami sandwich? Go to New York, find one of them hole-in-the-wall delis, and you'll say, yeah, I get it now. I get it. So.
Well, yeah, that's... That'll be a special kind of yummy up there. Only honest to God, the only thing that's worrying me is I see it seems like I see a new flu story every day, and I've got a little case of the creeps about getting on aircraft with a bunch of recirculated air with, you know, little tiny snot molecules blowing through it. I don't know.
Yeah,
what kind
hand
of,
gel's not going to help you there, is it, brother?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what kind of filtration they've got on those things, but
hopefully it's good.
I mean, it's only 10% effective, but I think I maybe better go get the damn flu shot.
Yeah, well, 10% beats a zero, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
But, you know, you're coming back on a federal holiday. That may be why you're getting dicked around as far as having to fly into Atlanta and all that. I don't know.
No. There were other flights available. It was just
right.
The ticket was another $100 or $200 or $300. It was ridiculous.
Well, you know, change the subject. I think all my bitching and daily emailing to Washington Journal, I may have finally gotten through. Of course, I would like to think that they finally hit a hot button topic this morning about the secret memo being leaked. Well, not leaked. I mean, you know what I mean.
Released.
The memo. Yeah, released. They just couldn't avoid it anymore. So, but yeah, the rubes were out in full force. But I'd like to touch on something with you, if I could.
Does it require you? Do you have to wear gloves to touch it? I mean, I'm just
No. It's clean, but I don't know if it's safe for kids or not. So if you have children or if you're at work, you might
run little Timmy and little Cindy and little Susie out of there. Yeah, right. Get them out of here.
Well, I know you think we're screwed, but me and you have had this debate moreover from the Electoral College. Is that correct? More so the gerrymandering?
They are separate branches on the overall electoral manipulation tree. The Electoral College has to do with presidential politics. The gerrymandering has primarily to do with the House and with individual state legislative races.
Well, you know, I could not wrap my head around why we were being so screwed with this gerrymandering thing until I watched a special on Netflix, and I have some required watching for the Horn family, if you want to do it, and if you were like me and couldn't wrap your head around it. It's almost like gerrymandering for dummies. It's on Netflix, and it's on a special called The Naked Truth. It's episode 8, and it's called Rigged. And it explains it in the most simplistic terms that even somebody like me could wrap their head around it. You know, as far as the state legislature, with the exception of six states, they cut up these districts. And that's why we're so screwed. I bet 9 out of 10 people can't even name who their state legislators are. I couldn't a year ago.
Well, unfortunately, I can, and I despise them.
Yeah. And, you know, and when we have an election, my two Republicans, they're always ran unopposed.
Well, I know who my state legislators are. They're both Republicans. They always win 2-1.
Do they run unopposed? I mean,
well, I've got a pretty close Facebook friend that's running against him, but he's expected to lose 2-1 as well. So,
yeah, I mean, six states, with the exception of six states, California being one of them, California always gets it right. This is the way they divide their district. And if you looked at, say, just pick one, Virginia Fox, she's in North Carolina district, up there around Boone, that area. Look at that district. It looks like a two-headed monster. So you know there's shenanigans going on, man. There's no question about it.
Let me try and put this in some sort of natural context for you. I'm
Please.
Sure every empire that has ever collapsed has undergone some form of shenanigans in terms of power control. This is just a natural process of empire collapse. I'm not saying that we're wasting our time practicing politics, because trust me, these skills that we're practicing right now, they're going to come in useful, you know, especially after the Arctic ice cap fails and our food supply goes away. We're really going to need to be able to be sharp on our politics then. But let's not beat around the bush here. America's done. That experiment is done.
Yeah, you're like politics, Bob, just a little ray of sunshine.
Yeah, our politics is going to have to be practiced under a little bit of a different rubric here. Okay, our politics is going to have to be practiced in an environment where food is very scarce and conflict of a violent nature is far more prevalent.
How far out do you think that is?
3 years, 5 years tops.
Oh, I think no.
Look at the data on the Arctic ice shelf. Look at the data. I spend a lot of time looking at scientific data from the Arctic ice shelf. Okay, that Arctic ice shelf almost went away completely in the summer 2016. It fared a little bit better in summer 2017, but it's already the maximum that it was supposed to reach in March. It's already retreating from that, and it's early February. That's not good. That's not good by any standard. Look at the data. Look at the science.
Oh, yeah. And then there's, that place in South Africa? They're running out of water?
Yeah.
Cape Town.
Less than 30 days.
That ice cap is our main stabilizing vector for our global agricultural system. Without that being there, we're not going to be able to produce crops to scale.
Well, I've always heard water is the most important commodity. Screw wool, screw gold, screw all that other crap. It's going to come down to water.
I remember calling into my, you know, local liberal station KTNF here in Minneapolis, and it wasn't the regular guy that was running the show. It was somebody that was about, you know, in his 70s or 80s, and he told me, you know, World War III is going to be fought over water. Pure and simple. World War III is going to be fought over water.
Yeah, well, now it looks like World War III is going to be fought over North Korea, and maybe World War IV will be fought over water.
by rocks and stones. Didn't Einstein say something similar to that?
Yeah.
How about World War V? Didn't Fox say there was going to be a World War V, like when the, you know, there was a Middle East war a little while ago, like several years back, if you all remember that? They disagreed on whether it was World War III, IV, or V, or whatever, you know?
you know Fox is creaming their pants tonight. I can't bring myself to watch it. I just can't.
I don't want to be that big of a downer, but, you know, it's just one of those things where I just think I know too much. But given, you know, given the instability that we're about to face, it's hard for me to put it into words. You know, it's one of the reasons why I've been so hesitant to call lately. I don't want to be the guy that always comes in saying, we're all going to die. I don't want to be that guy. Trust me, I don't want to be that guy.
Well, you almost get the feeling if we can't toss this orange monster out now after what we know, we're done. And I hate to be, you know, like Bob, a little ray of sunshine, but you can't ignore the obvious either.
Well, maybe if we're lucky, we can get technology along the place where we can store our memories like an altered carbon, you know. I haven't read the book, but I'm enough of an anime fan, if you're familiar with Ghost in the Shell and all the other anime that are, you know, familiar with, you know, transplanting memories, you know, plugging a cord into your neck and whatever. I tell you what, Bob, once you get done watching that Altered Carbon premiere tonight, maybe sit back and just do, you know, introduce yourself to some Mary Jane and watch a show called Kaiba. KIABA.
Right there.
It's a weird, it is Japanese anime, but it's not It's not in the style, kind of.
Yeah,
Japanese
I gotta confess, I have respect for the art form, but I've never been able to just, you know, wrap my head around it.
Hulu?
It's gonna take KAIBA. It probably is on Hulu. I know I can find it on Amazon. You know, that's what I've got, but it's one of those shows where the art style is not anime. The art style is more like almost Walt Disney 1930s style. It's that much of a trip.
I'm ruined, okay? I grew up on the work of people like Chuck Jones and Friz Freleng and stuff that
the premise of the show is memories can be stored as information via chips, and when individuals die, their minds live on. And the digitization of this memorization of this mental information allows for the transfer of one's mind into someone else's body. And one of the key plot lines is that the theft and manipulation of other people's memories has become the norm. You know, and so you wind up with a society that's largely divided into two classes, where you've got the upper class that can afford to buy and sell and steal whatever memories and whatever, you know, souls that they can attach to, and there's a lower class that is kind of at the mercy of this upper class, and there's this one central character that has a real central role to play in this, and I don't want to give any spoilers, because you really got to watch this show. It's a trip. It's a trip. You've got to watch this show. You know, I'm just, again, KAIBA, Kaiba. And I understand there are a lot of people here that aren't interested in the genre. I'm not trying to, you know, Ghost in the Shell is a very nice show to watch from the genre. It's a very straightforward, run-of-the-mill kind of anime show. Kaiba is nothing like that. It's a very beautifully run.
As far as Altered Carbon is concerned, I find it interesting because, well, and it's always that way with science fiction, because it at least for me, it makes me think. For instance, there are certain assumptions that are made in Altered Carbon that I just don't think are going to be realistic 500 years from now. But beyond that, again, no spoilers. Read the book, because it's gonna be a pity. It's gonna be a pity when I watch this thing, and they've completely wrecked the book.
Yeah.
I have to realize that it won't matter to 99% of the audience.
Well, one of the books that I just recently bought a couple days ago, and I managed to get an author autographed copy, and I'm planning on starting to read it this week, is Ready Player One. That's one I'm definitely looking forward to read. It's in my bag, and I'm going to tear into it as soon as I get some free time here.
Well, I just got a note and another reminder, since we're a little over the halfway point of the program. I hope we don't lay a goose egg tonight. I'm just saying that. Because we're still at $200 to go. Steve in New York writes and says, if this level of corruption, subject line, Steve from Georgia Stan speaks the truth. If this level of corruption doesn't get people up in arms, I think we're done. And it depends entirely on what you
We're
mean.
Done.
It depends, but okay, let's try to sort of, there's that colloquial. I hate that colloquialism. Let's unpack this. but we unpack things and we put things on stack now. And
it's amazing.
And we drill down too. We drill down.
Yeah, drill down.
We don't drill up. We drill down.
Drill, baby, drill.
Right. But let's take a look at what do you mean? What do we mean? Because, you know, I've said that this country is circling the drain. What do we mean when we say we're done? I mean, is somebody just going to pull a chain on the neon light that says United States and we're just all going to be dark?
Collapse is a very dynamic process. I understand, Bob. It's going to be impossible to predict exactly which way something is going to fall here or there.
Well yeah, but Laurel, okay. I was speaking more in terms of the political dynamic, and you know, Steve from Georgistan, when you say we're done, what do you mean? And I'm not putting you on the spot. I mean, this is what this conversation is about.
Well, I hate to speak in jingoisms, but America as we have known it will be, and I don't even know what that means, but that's the best way that I can articulate it.
Right. So let's try to figure out what that means. I mean, are the trains going to stop running on time? Are the planes going to fall out of the air? Are we not going to be able to vote anymore? It doesn't seem because they've rendered it, and I don't want to put anybody off from voting, but we've talked about the gerrymandering and the voter suppression. They've made it awfully meaningless, haven't they?
A lot of it is
when the people who get the most votes don't get to serve in office, you know.
Bob, I think what it means is we're going to go back to the Gilded Age, where you have the elite, the top 5%, and then everybody else is just going to work to serve them. And that's going to be a horrible existence for the other 95%. And I hate to talk like this. You know me, I'm a sunny optimist, but that's what I mean when I say we're done.
Well, a lot of it is going to depend on which pegs fall first. Remember, when we talk of collapse, it's not just a matter of a particular system collapsing or a particular mindset collapsing. We're talking about a drawdown of an entire civilization.
Okay. Well, but again, I'm not talking
facets to the civilization that are beyond politics.
I know, but here. I'm addressing specifically this idea that we are politically done. I mean, because we can game out a whole bunch of Mad Max scenarios.
Well, let me put it this way. We might be entering a period where a lot of the people that's surrounding me right now that are in the grips of a Fox News narrative, once a collapse of a grid and a scale drops down on us, those people that are surrounding me may not be under that influence anymore, because that influence has gone away. Okay.
So Fox is going to go away?
If our electrical grid goes down, a lot of stuff is going to go away. Okay.
Yeah, but that's what I just said. We can game out a lot of Mad Max scenarios, and that's one of them.
And that's quite the leap.
Where nobody has electricity anymore. That's highly unlikely to happen.
Unless you're talking nuclear war. It depends on which peg falls first. If it's our economic system that falls first, it could fall one way. If it's our political system that falls first, it could be another way. If it's a major pandemic that comes in, it's going to be another way. There are a lot of things that run into the gamut here that we can't begin to compute, because, yeah, I understand what's going on. The problem here is you're dealing with a civilization that at its core is fundamentally unsustainable. You're dealing with a population that has quadrupled in population over the last 60 years. That's not sustainable, not by any metric. Okay, we're dealing with a civilization that is burning through fossil fuels at a rate that is either going to completely choke us off or completely starve us of that fossil fuel reserve within the next century. Okay, that's not sustainable at any metric. Okay, I understand that people don't want to try to confront that, but it's something that we need to keep in mind. You know, I understand that I'm not geared
so you're,
in to
so
see
you're,
the exact...
You're positing a people peddling Gilligan bicycles kind of future.
I don't
Gilligan coconut bicycles.
Bob, you have a way with words.
Bob, I wish I knew exactly how this was going to fall.
I don't think it'll be that cushy. I don't think 30%, and that's a low figure, of humanity will be able to survive without electricity. All our houses are all structured around the need for electricity. Without electricity, I have no water.
Without electricity, well,
Bob, what do I do without propane for 3 months?
Okay,
Something happens that interrupts the delivery of heating propane for 3 months. I live in freaking Minnesota.
Right,
okay?
Even if you got a generator,
okay,
eventually.
Yeah, hold on. Forget
about any political matter.
Hold on.
What if I end up without propane for 3 months?
You migrate to a warmer area.
Well,
along with 20 million of my best friends.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody would migrate. You just have a mass migration once it gets cold.
And
everybody,
yeah, used to do that all the time.
Kansas and Missouri and Louisiana is just going to be happy to accept us.
No.
Well, I'm not saying they'd accept you.
When their own system is being rent asunder by whatever cataclysm has been fallen.
Well, what you'd have is you'd be about as welcome as the Okies were in California during the Grapes of Wrath era, you know, the Dust Bowl era. You know?
The Okies and the Arkies.
When the Dust Bowl happened, global population was 1/4 of what it is now.
Oh, I know.
You have no idea just how much of a negative impact overpopulation is having on any political discussion we're having right now.
Well, we need, you know, based on our population, we need something like 3 Earths, you know, worth of resources in order
to
sustain.
It's closer to 5.
Is it 5? Okay.
I've gone through all the data on this. Trust me, you know, I hate to come across as some kind of fucking nerd or something, but this is something I've studied most of my life. I studied physics and anthropology. I studied, you know, I studied statistics. I've been a statistics nerd my whole life. I studied fascism my whole life. That's what got me so into, you know, up in arms about what was happening now. I remember 1991 going to a Nobel conference when I was 20 years old. One of the biggest memories I had was just asking the panel, and this was up in the Twin Cities when the Twins were winning the World Series over the Braves, that great World Series. And I'm a big Twins fan, but that's my biggest memory, is most of the Nobel laureates saying the Twins don't have a chance of winning the World Series and me just laughing and proving them wrong. But regardless of that, I've been in touch with some of the greatest minds in this country. It's not like I'm coming at this from a position of ignominy, okay? We're dealing with a very unsustainable situation here. We really are. And I understand. I don't want to come crashing down on everybody. But we really need to rethink how we approach this politically from a perspective of a liberal or a progressive. Let me ask you this. How do you define progress in an age of collapse? What does it mean to be progressive in an age where we could be seeing our population cut by 80% over the next 20 years? How do you define progress in that? Have to be looking at this from more of a, and this
why
is going to sound
okay. Why do you
look at this
Hold on. Why do you define it as collapse? Evolution operates neither positively nor negatively. It's not necessarily collapse. It's change. You know, you're talking about, you know, how am I going to, you know, you mentioned Minnesota. You know, the first time I ever saw northern Wisconsin, the first thing that passed through my mind, and maybe this is because of, you know, my background in culture, society, anthropology, archaeology, you know, the cups of coffee that I've had in various disciplines. But when I looked around there and I told my wonderful hosts up there at the time, I said, if you think about this place before the arrival of white colonists, once using our big human brains, once people figured out how to deal with the cold, everything else was gravy. You know, in zero temperatures, I visited in at the what was called the help camp in the opposition to the massive taconite mine that was planned for up there. I visited the word is wigwam. That was as warm as toast and was made out of what the forest provided. Okay? We so-called Anthropocene humans are accustomed to what we have grown up in, but the fact of the matter is, as I've said before, I'm fortunate in that I had, as a kid, I got to talk to a human being, more than one, who knew what it was to live without electricity at all. My own mother lived in homes where the electricity came from Delco batteries, which they would, when they could afford them, go and swap out for another recharged Delco battery.
Understood, Bob, but houses were built differently then. They had high ceilings, and they were structured to where you would get a breeze that came through the front.
No, there wasn't any high ceiling in the house where my grandmother was born.
Okay, but I'm saying as a whole, because I've...
They were cabins.
My grandparents were...
And tar paper shacks.
Bob, I couldn't imagine half this population living without an iPhone for 24 hours. You know, I'm at a loss trying to connect, because I don't want any of this to happen. When a tsunami is coming rushing ashore and I tell people to run for high ground, I'm not doing it because I condone tsunamis. You know, I just see something really bad coming, and I want people to not be swamped by it, you know?
Laurel, if it's as bad as you say, people are going to be swamped by it, and there ain't no getting ready for it, okay?
And because that's in the back of my mind, I know we're dealing with forces of nature here. And when dealing with forces of nature, human beings are pretty powerless, okay? And that's kind of the bottom line here. I mean, we can pretend to.
Well, see, I was asking questions, and I've asked it periodically over the years. I remember when I had Mike Rozelle on, a friend of mine, you know, one of the original founders of Greenpeace, one of the original founders of the Rainforest Action Network, and founder of Climate Ground Zero down in the Coal River Valley. And I asked him, I said, because it's kind of one of his theses, people, especially in the so-called developed world, have no earthly clue what it means when we talk about taking steps necessary to avert a wholesale disaster as a result of climate change. I mean, it's great that people are changing their light bulbs and putting in LED bulbs. It's great that people are using solar panels. I wish to hell we had them here. You know, beyond just being able to raise a middle finger toward Appalachian Power and go, ah, the next time their crappy old grid goes down, it would be nice to have them. But even if you bone up on seriously on wind and solar, you find out that there are still significant limitations to the technology.
Well, okay? Exactly. I mean,
and the fact of the matter is, there has to be a massive shift in the way people live on a day-to-day basis. I mean, the reason that there's been a population, to the extent that there's been one, you know, the world is overpopulated. The United States and Canada are not. You can even argue that Mexico isn't. But the United States and Canada certainly aren't. Portions are, but that's because we make stupid choices about where humans live. But we have no idea what's... I mean, for instance, the one thing, more than anything other, that made a massive population shift to the south possible is air conditioning.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be where Steve is, or where I grew up, or God knows that place where the peaches grow in Alabama, Clanton County. You don't want to be there in August or July. You know, to this day, we have the August recess in Washington, D.C. of the Congress, because that's when the Congress got out of town so that they wouldn't fucking die of malaria, because D.C. was built on a malarial swamp. And so we don't, climate change, sea level rise, all of these things are going to be paradigm shifters, and people will die.
Well,
But the thing, Laurel, is they're not going to all be, it's not going to all happen on a Tuesday. It's the frog in the boy. I hate this metaphor. I hate it, especially since Glenn Beck used it. But it's the frog in the pot, okay? And most people aren't gonna know it's coming. And the ones that do, hopefully, will prepare accordingly. I mean, one of the funny things about this shabby little mansion where I live is, when it was built, it was more sustainable than it is now, because there was no city water. And so consequently, there was a well, and every outbuilding was guttered, and all the gutters ran into a cistern, and there was a 7-foot tall cistern above ground and a 7-foot deep one below ground that created a gravity feed into the house. No pump, no electricity, nothing.
Same for my parents' house. Exact same for my parents' house. It was built in the 1890s. Exact same. Had a cistern outside. It had gutters the whole 9 yards. Yeah.
But
I understand where you're coming from.
But we've gotten lost in the weeds of collapse of civilization. What the original question on the table was, is what does we're done mean? And for instance, Earther says, I think when people say that we're done, what they usually mean is that the country is irretrievable as a free and democratic society. And Earther sends me a lot of funny stuff, but that was deadly serious. And I think that's a pretty close,
spot on, yeah,
approximation of what it in fact does mean. Meanwhile, Steve in New York sends his apologies and his regards, saying that he can't get into the conversation, but would like to be here. But he says, here's what I mean when I say we're done. See the state of Panem in Hunger Games. But again, that's I'm not disagreeing. That may be in the future, but it's not in the near future, okay? Hunger Games is so far out that you can't. It's so far
here,
out in the
here's
future
the thing.
You can't. Wait, please.
Okay.
These things that are way far out in the future are fun to think about. It's kind of like altered carbon, but they are all processes of more or less tiny little steps. Little things happening that add up to a larger whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. When we talk about being politically done, I think what we're talking about is something that's actually been happening for a very long time. It is the erosion of the foundational principles upon which this government was organized, and the high-minded ideals. We managed to fight a war, and 300,000 or 400,000 Americans got killed in it, and 300,000 people who had committed treason died too. But we did it, and the outcome was the end, so to speak, of slavery. And then this country turned around and created slavery by other names.
Which is why I consider Abraham Lincoln's decision to keep the South in the Union as the greatest mistake made by any human in the 19th century. And this is not an affront to anyone who is descended from anyone who suffered through slavery. But because the fact that matter that we kept that millstone attached around our neck rather than allowing that system to play itself out, allowing the South to gain its true, allowing the slaves in the South to gain their true independence through their own means, which happened in every other nation on the planet. We allowed that millstone to hang around our neck. You see where I'm coming from here? Not to say that slavery is gone or anything. I know it's still here. But if Lincoln had let the South go, the slaves in the South, given their birth rates, would have eventually gained the numbers to reach their freedom. Look at the technological advancements that were being made during the time. Okay, you had the cotton gin coming along. You had the printing press coming along. There were a lot of slaves that were learning how to read under the radar. Eventually, the time was going to come. Maybe it would have taken a couple of extra generations, but they would have won their freedom. And they would have done so in a way that would have not allowed for this Jim Crow to spring forth to the extent that it has today. And again, I understand counter-historianism is such a goddamn mind bleep that I can understand where you can find problems with it. But I don't see any way from my perspective that letting the South go would have resulted in the South remaining enslaved up to the present day. I just don't see it.
Well, Bob, could it mean we're done, that we're possibly inching to Orwell's 1984 dystopian society? Is that a possibility?
You know, nothing is going to be exactly as predicted. The closest that we've gotten is the prediction that when fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross or a Bible or whatever the exact quote is. But I see people, and you know, we use the term Orwellian, but they're all close approximations. They're not one-to-one analogs. We're going to fall apart in our own unique way. But history exists for a reason. We created the idea, the discipline of history, so that we could learn what the past had to teach the present. And what we're seeing is, for instance, a diminution of the role of the Congress that was designed to have been an absolutely vibrant body that probably took the lead in most things. It has the vast majority of the power under the Constitution. But over the course of the history of this country, power has sort of leaked into the presidency, and it took a quantum leap with the rise of what we call the administrative state. All these things are attempts to respond to changing circumstances. The America of 1860 was considerably different from the America of 1787. Railroads and telegraphs alone had changed the country dramatically. The Louisiana Purchase did too. Waves of immigration did. And that's why the people who were the real farseers, you know, before he died, James Madison was saying, look, we got it wrong as far as the franchise and suffrage was concerned. If we're going to have anything resembling a country in which people are the actual sovereigns of the government, if they are the rulers and not the ruled, we're going to have to expand the franchise. As I mentioned, Andrew Jackson says, hey, we need to do something about the Electoral College. And it's those resistances and those failures, as much as direct changes, that have led us to where we are. What if Andrew Jackson had said we got to do something about the Electoral College, and the Congress had repealed the Electoral College and said the president's going to be elected on a popular vote? What happens then?
What if Al Gore would have won back in 2000? I mean, you can what if yourself to death.
No, but that's more structural, Steve. You know, what if the Electoral College had been done away with 170 years ago? That's far more structural than saying, you know, what if we didn't have a corrupt Supreme Court? That's nearer in time.
Look, when I show up to my party caucus later on this week, you know, I'm going to propose that there be a constitutional amendment to discontinue the Electoral College, and there's probably going to be 10 or 12 other people that are going to do the exact same thing. It's not like the things that are apparent now. You know, it's not like this is a surprise that the Electoral College is a problem. You know. The thing is, we have to get beyond, you know, we have to get beyond the electoral scale, you know, and focus on why half of our society hates our guts, you know, and that's
Well, we've been wallowing in doom and gloom for what, almost an hour now, so.
I'd be in a lot better mood if the Vikings were in the Super Bowl.
Let's talk about how we can turn this around.
Hold on. We haven't even heard from Billable Rick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, hey, bring him in.
Yeah, we have.
I'm sorry, Rick.
I said about one or two words edgewise. That's okay.
Come on in, man. I'm sorry.
You shoehorned his way in.
I was doing some Billable activities for the last 3/10 of an hour, so therefore I couldn't contribute anyway, but here I am back. So it's good timing. I was assiduously listening to Randy Rhodes today and her dissection of this bogus GOP House Intelligence Committee memo. And, you know, this thing is, I think, going to backfire on them eventually. Not even eventually, fairly quickly, I imagine. And this is going to be just another just additional evidence of obstruction on the part of Devin Nunes and Trump. You know, the Democratic version is obviously going to get released. And I guess it all depends on how this plays out in the echo chamber as far as how, you know, Joe Sixpack or whatever, you know, thinks about the whole thing. You know, the only way we're going to get that monster out of the White House is to indict him. So, you know, and to have a scathing report delivered to Congress so that, Congress either, you know, impeaches him and removes him, or Mueller, you know, has his way with him in the criminal courts. So that's really the only way I see this playing out, is, you know, from what I can tell, you know. But it's a very weak memo, because it's
obviously a house of cards. It reads like it was written by somebody in first semester of 1L.
It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
I mean, this is a project from Legal Writing One, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, there were three FISA renewals from the FISC. So, you know, clearly, you know, the way the Republicans are pitching it is the only two pieces of evidence that supported this, what, I guess it would have been a fourth renewal. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been a fourth renewal of the warrant is the, you know, the dossier. OK, from Michael Steele and news reports as to what, you know, what Steele told reporters as far as, you know, what his investigation results were. But it obviously is based on intercepts because Carter Page, you know, he was like, you know, well known to be connected to Russians. And he was, you know, he was caught on intercepts talking to Russians who were under foreign intelligence surveillance. And he was unmasked as a result of that, I believe.
Since 2013, I've been monitoring him.
Yeah, so it's sort of strange that they're sort of... I think this is kind of highlighting the Russian connection between Page and Trump. You know, and the fact that, you know, Trump's people are contacting Russians, and they basically have been groomed by Russians. And I understand that once Page's identity was unmasked in these wiretaps, these authorized wiretaps, I understand that the FBI approached him and said, look, you know, you need to cut it out with these Russians. They're trying to recruit you, you know, for, you know, spying activities against the U.S. They actually gave him a warning. And I know from experience, I know in the money laundering context, FinCEN, or the, I guess it would be the, what is it? It used to be Secret Service would handle money laundering investigations, if you could believe that. They would warn people if they thought they were, let's say, engaged in, you know, unlawful currency structuring activities, that kind of thing. That's when you basically withdraw cash or deposit cash in increments of $10,000 or less to try to evade the currency reporting requirements, because banks are required to report suspicious activity. They file suspicious activity reports with the government to try to cut down on, you know, money laundering. It's part of the anti-money laundering statutes. And so, you know, for a guy like Page to have been given a warning by the FBI and then to continue blithely doing what he was doing before, because he styled himself as like a, you know, possible oil oligarch, I guess, the way, you know, he thought he was a big expert with regard to Russian energy and so forth. You know, it's just amazing that that guy could be so stupid. And I'm kind of amazed the guy hasn't been indicted yet by Mueller, because he's clearly not cooperating from what I can tell anyway, unless he's playing a role of like a double, unless he's playing a double game by coming out on the media saying outrageous things that are very pro-Trumpian while secretly being under a cooperation agreement and getting more information from Mueller. So anyway, that's how I see
well,
it.
You know, I saw a meme earlier today in which there was a picture of Bob Mueller, and the language around it, or the caption, I guess is the word, says, "At first, I laughed at the memo, and then I marked it Exhibit 1.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we have,
I mean, there's actually cases on point, and not like one or two. Cases on point on what constitutes a corrupted affidavit for a warrant.
Uh-huh, right.
And the court has for a very, very long time, Rick, acknowledged, and I'm sure you know this better than I, that confidential informants are going to come to the process with their own motives.
Right.
And that it's silly to think that a court wouldn't recognize that.
Right.
And that a
court... Right. In fact, I had a... When I was with the government, I had a Ninth Circuit judge... Stephen Trott is the fellow's name. He used to be the U.S. attorney, I think. I don't know if it was for Central District or where, somewhere in California. And he spoke about the danger of building your cases on just the testimony of informants, especially jailhouse informants, because they're going to say anything they can to try and get reduction of their sentence or lenient treatment.
Right.
So
I mean, that's just one of them.
Right.
Or, I mean, there's lenient treatment, or how about just straight up, I hate their guts personality conflicts?
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
And as for Carter Page not being indicted yet, I'm inclined to think that, I'm not a Republican. I've never been a Republican. And I'll never be a Republican.
Right.
But you look at one of these old warhorse lawyers like Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the guy A knows his business.
Yeah.
And that you get the sense he takes it pretty goddamn seriously.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't smile a lot.
he doesn't look like he's a real hoot at parties.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of those people who lives a life of rectitude and taciturnity.
Right, a good word.
And so, consequently, I think he's working up through the food chain, and the fact that he hasn't touched Carter Page yet probably indicates that he won't get to Carter Page until he's gotten to a few other people. Of more interest to me right now is the fact that Rick Gates and Paul Manafort have apparently parted company.
You cut out there, Bob.
I said of greater interest to me is that Rick Gates and Paul Manafort have apparently parted company.
Oh, yeah. The news came out that Rick Gates' current defense lawyers, his three-attorney defense team, have asked to, they filed a motion to withdraw from the case. And the new attorney who came in, like just last week, to join the team is apparently well known for doing deals. Like, you know, he's not a trial lawyer. He's more of a Bob Shapiro type of a litigator. He likes to do plea deals, you know?
My concern is if they get Rosenstein out and put a Trump toady in there, it's really going to cripple Mueller's ability to just bring any kind of action against them, because without Rosenstein there, with a Trump toady there, Mueller could say, I want a subpoena against so-and-so, and the Trump toady will say, no, you ain't getting it.
No, that's not how it works. Lorel,
no.
That's not how it works.
No.
I may be hearing it wrong.
I mean, that's not even remotely how it works.
No, he has, Rosenstein has just only very general supervisory authority over Mueller, but
I watched CNN this afternoon, so maybe CNN's wrong as hell. So
hey. Maybe. I mean, a guy that senior is going to be given a lot of latitude in how he does his investigation. Okay. He's a special prosecutor, basically, is what he is. Special counsel, whatever they call him. So, you know, he doesn't have to get anybody's authority.
I should have went to law school, Rick.
That's all right.
Maybe it's not too late. I don't know. I probably couldn't afford it, but...
Well, you know, you never know. It is a lot of money. I couldn't afford it if I went to it today. That's for sure.
No, I couldn't do it. No.
At today's prices, yeah. So, Bob, where were you going now with that?
Well, just the idea that that if he hasn't gotten to Carter Page yet, it's because Carter Page is further up the ladder. I mean, frankly, I would expect to see. United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. I'd expect to see him indicted before Carter Page. Because, I mean, this is a ladder climb.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, I mean, it's so, and by the way, we made a mistake. I've made it. You made it. It ain't Michael Steele. It's Christopher Steele, as Bill.
And
Bill Allentown points out. Oh, by the way, 20 past the hour. We're still at $200 to go on this Friday on the front porch. So
we gotta lighten this stuff up. Come here.
I'll tell you what, Bob. Let me take care of that here. I'm gonna do a transitional electrical vehicle rebate challenge. I just got my rebate check from the state of California for the Volt I got the end of 2016. And so I'm going to throw in $25, and we'll double it to a total of $50 if somebody can match that.
Okay, so $25 comes in, you turn it into $50. So that makes it takes us to $75, and that would get us to only $125 to go, which is a few shovelfuls of dirt into a hole that would otherwise be $400 deep come Monday. Thank you, Billable Rick.
Absolutely.
But as far as this process is concerned, like I said, it's all terribly cloak and dagger. But because we have the Nixon history of the Saturday Night Massacre, do you think that an old war horse like Robert Mueller is just sort of sitting around, and if he gets fired, he'll just go out and turn off the lights and leave a room full of boxes of documents, and that'll be the end of it? Or do you think maybe he's got a few thumb drives laying around that will suddenly show up in, say, the offices of the Washington Post and the New York Times, and who knows, maybe even the office of Attorney General Eric Schneiderman in New York?
He's probably got his ass covered seven ways to Sunday.
And he's probably got his ass covered with a pocket indictment, possibly of the president even, which would then be unsealed and, you know, presented.
Do you think,
when he
do
gets
you think
fired.
A grand jury could keep that secret?
That's a good point.
My problem doesn't come with the grand jury, Bob. My problem comes with the 65 million who are willing to cover for him. Comes down to that.
Well, but they're chicken shits, okay? They only march if they think that they're going to be that, you know. They're like our national symbol, the bald eagle. It never attacks anything its own size or that can fight back.
Mm-hmm. The county I work in went 6-1 Trump.
So, okay. I mean, are they going to march on Washington, Laurel?
I don't think so.
No.
I hope not.
No. No, they're not. And they'll bitch about
every
it.
Every march you've ever had has turned out to be a pathetic waste of time.
So, yeah, I don't know. I find it difficult to believe that how many are in a grand jury? 36 plus alternates, Rick?
Not quite that many. I think it's a total of maybe 24 in a federal grand jury. You have to have 18 to have.
So you think they could keep it quiet? I mean, hell would yawn open if one of them ran their mouth.
That's true. Well,
but as a seasoned prosecutor, do you necessarily go for the indictment of Donald Trump before you finished with everybody else?
No, I think what you generally do is you go after the low-hanging fruit first, and then you work your way up, is how it works.
Right.
Which is why I think Sessions will be one of the last to be indicted, if he does get indicted. I think Page will get indicted before him. I think, you know, who else is out there?
And if you're going to engage in the... In the constitutional question of whether you can indict a sitting president, you're going to want to have every shred of evidence against that president you can possibly have, right?
That is true.
So it'd be kind of unlikely that you've got a pocket indictment, I would think. And by the way, thank you, Steve. Thank you for jumping in on that. That means
you're welcome.
We're $5 away from meeting. From meeting Billable Rick's challenge. That's huge. Thank you so very much, Steve.
You're welcome.
Just one quick thing then. And this, I don't know. I've never presented a case to a federal grand jury. But is it possible that they could just sit there and listen to evidence and listen to evidence and listen to evidence, and then at the end start issuing indictments? Because, I mean, once the grand jury issues an indictment, unless it's put under seal, and there has to be a damn good reason for doing that, you've pretty much got to disclose that you've got the indictment, don't you?
Yeah, unless there's some reason to keep it under seal, like if you've got a cooperating defendant, for example. You know, if you've got a cooperating witness that, you know, that's going to, you know, impact the pending indictment, let's say, you know. But, yeah, you're generally right. I mean, yeah, what they do is the, they'll hear a bunch of evidence and you just present it to, you have however many sessions you need to get all the evidence, get all the witnesses in. And then you get to a point where you feel you're ready to indict. You believe you've met the burden of, you know, not just more likely than not that a crime has been committed, but a conviction is, you know, is reasonably, you're reasonably confident of getting a conviction.
Well, Rick, weigh in on something for me, if you will. And you may have already given your opinion. If so, it escapes me. Bob and I have volleyed this back and forth many times. And I've heard law professors from Ivy League schools with various opinions. Do you think a sitting president can be indicted?
Well, that's a very good question. I was talking to my buddy George at the dive bar a couple nights ago.
I wish your buddy George were here. Never mind. Sorry.
And he's a, there you go. He's a good dude. He's a defense attorney, and he knows that I was a prosecutor, but I'm now a defense attorney. And he's of the view that there is no statutory nor constitutional bar to indicting a sitting president. And that whole meme that you can't indict a sitting president arose. The only authority to support that is a memo that was developed during the Watergate era within DOJ.
Right.
So it's never been tested in court.
And the Constitution is silent on it.
Right. Right. It talks about impeachment as a political way to get rid of a president, but, you know, doesn't say that the president's above the law. The president has, let's say, executive immunity or something like that.
Yeah, well, but Rick, do you think Nixon would have resigned if he'd had the full power of Fox News behind him? I don't think so. There are a lot of people that were on news today saying Nixon wouldn't resign if he had Fox behind him today.
Well, that's kind of an academic exercise. I mean, I think Trump has made Nixon look like a piker myself. I mean, we basically have an agent of Russia in charge of the United States, you know, political apparatus, and our foreign policy is no longer America's, it's Russia's. And I don't even recognize this country anymore politically. So, Bob, what were you saying there?
I was merely going to point out that back before the upstanding Christian ladies, Democratic Ladies Coalition, and one Democratic Buddhist lady ran Al Franken out of the Senate, one of the things that Al taught us all, because he was a non-lawyer, but by God, he did his homework, is that the law despises an absurd result.
Yeah.
And a theory that says that the president cannot be charged with a crime would, in essence, create that absurd result. It would mean that the president was above the law, and that the president could, in fact, go out and, as Trump referenced, shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
Right. We're back to the era of kings and queens ordering people to their deaths and putting people in the Tower of London.
Or Jim Crow, where black people were killed en masse and nothing was done legally.
Yeah, that's not the president. I'm talking about actual crimes personally committed by the president, okay? The chief proponent of the idea that the president could not be indicted or charged with a crime was, of course, Richard Nixon, who, after the resignation, sat down with David Frost and said, if the president does it, it's not illegal.
Right, exactly.
It is patently ridiculous to think that. If the president of the United States was caught selling government secrets to the Russians, for all those fringe sparkle ponies out there on the margins, I'm not saying that happened. Because, of course, Russia didn't do anything, and, oh, wake up, sheeple, blah, blah, blah.
Well, Bob, I just want to point out that I think you've lost the ear of the sparkle fart unicorn.
Oh, no, they're still hanging around out on the margins.
Okay.
But to say that the president could commit treason against the United States, and you've got to sit around and wait for a political resolution by the Congress that's going to take perhaps months or years, the word for that is absurd.
It is. You're right.
And if we had a Supreme Court that wasn't packed with a bunch of right-wing schmucks, we could count on that.
Well, again, I think right now if a compelling case is brought against Trump, if Congress fails to act when it's clearly a national emergency, when you basically have a treasonous Russian stooge in the White House, I think Justice Kennedy would probably go along with the four Democrats on the court.
Well, if they went along. And that's right. The other thing, talk about absurd results. The only way to convict a criminal president would be with the votes of 67 senators? That's just stupid. The thing is, the only thing that does is remove him from office. It doesn't punish him for the underlying offense.
That's true. That's true.
And that's probably true. Why he's so brazen.
And all that is assuming that Trump's moment doesn't happen before all this happens.
I mean, 18 U.S.C. Section 10001, lying to the FBI.
Right.
It carries express statutory criminal penalties.
Actually, it's not limited to the FBI. It's any federal investigative agency.
Well, true. I'm just thinking of it in terms of the FBI. But it carries express criminal penalties, none of which are enforced by a conviction in an impeachment proceeding.
That's true.
At the close of an impeachment proceeding, if the Senate found and voted 80 to 20, say, that he was guilty of the crimes charged in the bill of impeachment, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, presiding over that trial, could not say, "You are convicted, and I commit you to the custody of the Federal Bureau of Prisons to serve an indeterminate sentence of not less than one nor more than 5 years." He couldn't say that.
No.
So in actuality, the argument that a president cannot be indicted for a criminal offense or charged with a criminal offense is actually an absurd argument.
It is. It is. And if I could tie back to my buddy George, my drinking buddy George, he started tweeting about this thing that, you know, Trump can be indicted. Who says a sitting president can't be indicted? There's no statutory nor constitutional bar to that. Lawrence Tribe, he was like trying to, you know, tweet to Lawrence Tribe and express his opinion. And apparently Tribe, some months later, has now changed his tune and does now believe that you can indict a sitting president. So, you know, he thinks he may have had some influence there. Who knows? But, it would lead to an absurd result. It basically reduces us to, it's like a monarchy, okay, or a dictatorship, actually. Probably more, you know, analogous to that.
So all told, then, if the Supreme Court of the United States, Billable Rick, J, writing for the court, you'd say, yeah, indict his ass.
Absolutely, yeah.
Issue the pickup order.
Right.
Now some of these become interesting questions of process, though. Oh, and by the way, your challenge has been met. Thank you to Kitty in Boston, who wishes everyone in the Horn family congregation a great weekend. Thank you, Kitty. Thank you so very much. So that means we're actually at $120 to go to finish fundraising, and hey, 26 minutes to get it done in. That would be cool. So that's where we are with that. Procedurally, though, it would present some problems because. Well, okay, Rick, tell people what happens when somebody is indicted. How are they hailed into court? Who go gets them? When are they arrested? When are they booked? When are they arraigned? How does all that go down?
Well, are we talking about white collar or violent criminal? Are we talking about a black person or white person? I guess we're talking about the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. So clearly white collar, very white skin. He would have his attorney. His attorney would make arrangements with the prosecutor to voluntarily appear. I don't know that he would voluntarily appear, but in the normal case of the white collar defendant, You know, you don't get the perp walk, you don't get arrested, you don't get roused from your sleep in the, you know, early morning hours. You know, you basically agree to appear pursuant to a summons to appear at your initial arraignment.
So a president would be summoned. You wouldn't send out the U.S. Marshals to perp walk him into the court.
No, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. So he would appear pursuant to summons. He would, you know, plead not guilty. There would be a hearing to set the trial date. Okay, you have a Speedy Trial Act. You have to be tried within, I think, like 90 days of when your initial appearance is, or the arraignment, I guess.
Unless you waive it.
And, you know, trial date is set, and then you basically have motions that are filed, and that would be what would, you know, I'm sure, toll the 90-day clock for a speedy trial, because, the president's attorneys would file a motion to dismiss and all sorts of things, and that would have to be adjudicated. That would have to go up to, you know, it would be decided by the district court, then by the D.C. Circuit, then by the Supreme Court, ultimately. So this whole process would probably, you probably wouldn't have a trial for at least a year or more, probably a year and a half, 2 years, you know?
And in the meantime, he's presumed innocent.
Yeah, sure.
In the meantime, our climate could fall apart.
Well.
Oh, God, Larell, really?
Really? Like I said, I wish the Vikings were in the Super Bowl. That loss really messed up my world. I apologize.
It wasn't even close, Larell. They just egged.
I was so goddamn optimistic going into that game.
Larell,
and I don't know why I should have been.
Larell, they should have.
With a backup quarterback. Why in the hell was I so optimistic going into that?
Larell, they shouldn't have been in the championship game in the first place.
I understand. I understand the miracle play and everything. I understand the fact that our defense was basically a no-show for six straight quarters. And still, why did I allow myself to get so optimistic about that
but
team?
Just
this year?
Think it.
Why?
Minnesota's making more money this weekend than if Minnesota would have been in the Super Bowl.
Okay. That's true.
We've got the best offensive line we've got coming back next year. Dalvin Cook is going to be healthy next year coming back. God, please stay healthy, Dalvin Cook. Please stay healthy. And we're going to have most of the defense back this next coming year.
You know, I'd just like to see Colin Kaepernick playing quarterback somewhere.
No kidding, man. If there's just
Did you see the commissioner's interview?
No, I didn't.
Well, he was asked about that, and he said, "Well, that's up to the individual teams."
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's.
He says, and I can't comment anyway because there's a grievance on file.
You know what?
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that if, let's say, maybe the NFL had maybe a third minority owners, like you had, you know, African Americans, Hispanics, somebody else owning NFL teams, Kaepernick would get picked up by them, I think, you know?
Well, Goodell in his press conference yesterday, he did a art. Day before yesterday, he addressed the issue of minority executives. He addressed the issue of trying to increase the number of that. I don't know how solid he is in upholding that commitment, but at least he gave word to it, you know.
Well, that's easy. Words are very easy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
exactly.
The president's speech at the State of the Union, you know, or disunion, whatever you want to call it. You know?
Since Rick brought it back to politics, I'd like to kind of wind down on a positive note. Let's put our heads together.
20 minutes is a long wind, Steve. Are you sure you're... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, well, all right. I'll jump back in.
No.
Time for a Steve Bobster.
No, go.
I don't want to talk about politics anymore.
Yeah, I just want to put our heads together and figure out a way out of this mess. And I think that there is the numbers. We have to get everybody we know out to vote. Everybody. When you go to the polls, take two people that are like-minded with you. Encourage your friends to jump in the process. I don't care if it's dog catcher, but we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Tell me what I do, Steve. I vote from home.
Well, you should not
vote by mail.
Start phone banking, Duncan. You got a phone? I mean, we have to do something.
No, I don't have a phone.
You got
nobody,
Skype.
Nobody calls me. Although I was in the grocery store yesterday, and I get a phone call on my cell phone. I answer it, and somebody, the gal goes, "Bill?" And I said, "No, you got the wrong number." And she says, and then she rattles off my number, and I said, "Yeah, that's the number."
All right, well, hand out pamphlets when you're at the grocery store then.
She starts saying, "Well, this guy, don't you work out with George?" And I said, "I don't even know a George."
Well, see, you're in California anyhow, so your state is sewed up.
Well, what you know who I want to get out of office? That Devin Nunes punk. That guy is a crook, you know?
Well, there's a guy running against him. He's got pretty good billboards around Fresno and Tulare County.
What do they say?
Oh, they show him with a backpack and he's or a baby no baby carrier, and he's carrying a baby Donald Trump on his back.
Whoa,
that's good. Oof.
Nice.
That's good.
Or Daryl Issa's seat. Try to fill somebody from the left in that thing.
Yeah, well, Issa's thinking of running in San Diego, as Scott informed us, or someone
right.
in family
right.
informed us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he may.
But still, the seat's going to be open.
I said he's going to run for Duncan Hunter's seat.
Why is Duncan Hunter leaving? Is he tired of, he's not making enough money as a congressman, or what?
I don't know.
Why are they all skedaddling?
That's what I heard.
Well, I think some of them are leaving because they're afraid of getting indicted. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. Who knows?
Go back to his rice field.
All right.
So, look, we know that Mueller is investigating or has been said to be investigating the fact that the Russians passed a shitload of rubles through the treasury of America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, the NRA.
Right.
The NRA has in turn provided campaign funds for practically every Republican with a pulse.
Right.
So by definition, that means it almost means by definition that there's Russian money in every Republican congressional war chest.
Right.
Look, I don't think these people are Trey Gowdy. That guy has been one of the most virulently hyper-partisan bircher, bagger, birther, deather, ninther, tenther, booger eaters in modern history. And all
don't
of a sudden,
he
hears his mama calling, and he misses the judicial system in South Carolina. Stan, oh please, I was born at night, not last night. Okay, here's another question for you, Rick. If a federal prosecutor sends a target letter, is that target letter public record?
No. No. That's a pre-indictment sort of situation. We're saying, hey, congratulations, you've won the prosecution lottery. You know, we've been authorized to prosecute you for X, Y, and Z. And, you know, if you want to resolve it without an indictment, have your attorney give us a call, basically, is what that says.
And see, you know? With these Republicans bailing out, given the current climate, it strikes me that there's one of two viable explanations. One, he knows that he's in jeopardy. Or two, he's managed to thus far cover up the fact that he couldn't keep his penis in his pants. It's about it.
It's the other night. That fourth district of South Carolina, where Trey Gowdy is from, is one of the most wealthiest and conservative. So he knows it's not going to fall into Democratic hands.
I don't think he's worried about into Democratic hands. I think he's worried about falling into federal prison.
Yeah, that too.
Love to see every Republican in this country get painted with a Russian brush. I just don't know if that's possible given our current media climate.
Fuck the media. If there's a federal prosecution, it's tried based on
who's
the facts
gonna,
and the evidence.
Who's going to believe the prosecution with our media?
Well,
it's about
if
the
a jury has presented certain
message.
Evidence. No, no, Laurel, cases are not tried in the media, okay? Okay, attorneys try things in the media, but, I mean, it's very rare that, that kind of a strategy is successful.
Rick,
you know?
I lived through the O.J. Simpson trial. Don't try that BS on me.
That's the exception. That's the exception that doesn't prove the rule, Laurel, okay? That was a one-off. There was also a long history of the black community getting railroaded by the cops, and they just had a distrust of the cops. And also, there's 100 different reasons why the prosecution lost in that case, even though the guy was clearly guilty of sin.
This doesn't bode well for radio, but I posted the 4th Congressional District in the Skype and in the chat room. Look at that hot mess. And that is what we're up against.
Well, I'm not being a bastard here. I don't really care. What I'm talking about is Trey Gowdy.
On a personal level, okay.
I'm talking about why did Daryl Issa suddenly realize that he had to do his hair for the next rest of his life? We know about what's his name, Barton and Farenthold in Texas. They were. They're skeevy little pervs, but these other the guy in Pennsylvania alleged to be a moderate, I think he really is sick of the process, and there is a past history of decent people just saying this is too indecent for me to continue in. There is
you're talking about Charlie Dent there, Bob.
Yeah. But there is no evidence to support that Trey Gowdy is that kind of decent human being. You can't sit there and shriek butthurt emails and Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi for 3 years, and all of a sudden decide that you don't like the way things are going in Congress. The fact
and admit on Fox News that you did it for political purposes.
Precisely. So. Look, I mean, if you go and you do the reading, you'll find that there is Russian money in Republican campaign coffers. It's undeniable. It's there in the election filings. They took the money. And the fact that that there may be people out there who are about to show just how dirty that money is and the purpose of the use of that money. For me, from an Occam's razor standpoint, is the simplest and most elegant explanation for why people like Trey Gowdy and Daryl Issa are suddenly disgusted with Washington, when in fact they're the people who made the people who made Washington disgusting. It's like that quote from poor old John McCain today, "Jumping Jesus H. Christ." I mean, honestly.
I've seen that.
Here it is. We're doing Putin's job for him. Well, no, we aren't, John. Your party is. And he's a great one for being a great one for roaring like the mighty lion, and then when the rubber hits the road. Meowing like a wounded kitty, like a wounded kitten.
Or playing the both siderisms card, which I'm about fed up to death with.
Here's the thing, and this is the thing that really hurts me. What do I say to my beloved nephew, who's been a career Air Force serviceman, who is a diehard Trump NC that I love? I love him very much. When I tell him, look, this guy is in neck deep with the Russians, and he cuts me off. How the hell am I supposed to respond to that?
You don't talk to him about politics, Laurel.
You don't talk to him about
Forget
it at
about
all, Laurel.
Exactly.
I
have loved
and
ones
they
who
will,
are hard right. You don't.
They will be hardcore Trump pansies. If he was removed from office tomorrow, you know what the you know
okay,
what the
okay
you know
10
what the,
years down the road
you know
10
what
years
the,
down
you know
the road
the, wait you know
10
what
years
the,
down the road
Laurel
this
Laurel
all,
okay. Laurel, if he got removed from office tomorrow, the Trump pansies would say, well, you know what? Because, see, there's history for this. Because it was said about Nixon. They all do it. He just got caught.
Both siderisms again. Good God. But what's heartbreaking, and you know, comment on top of what Larrell's saying, a lot of these people are good people. They're just simply misguided. And I know a lot of them.
Wait, who? The Trumpansies?
Some of them, yes, Bob.
My oldest brother, you know, Marine, Jarhead, Trumpansies, the word go.
I will. You know, I'm sorry.
You can take the Malloy stance and say, if it was my great grandmother and she was a Republican, I would hate her. But I can't do that. I'm just.
You know what? I'm in complete agreement with Hillary Clinton on this. You goddamn neoliberal shill, establishment centrist. I'm in complete agreement with Hillary Clinton on this because she said, and she was crucified for it. Speaking about the Trumpansies, she said, about half of them are good people. The other half of them are deplorable.
Perfect.
And so, so if you just need some sort of intellectual trick, then what you can say, Laurel, is that your Marine relative and your Air Force relative are part of that half of Trump's base that are good people.
Good people.
Okay.
I mean,
but you have to deal with the fact that the other half of them are goddamn Nazis and goddamn Klansmen and xenophobes and bigots and homophobes and evangelical Christians.
Just evil.
You cannot get around it. And the fact of the matter is, they vote, and look, I understand why Malloy says what he says, because he's not
right.
He's not wrong.
I'm not disparaging him either. I just can't take that.
You're a wonderful, wonderful person who just happened to prefer to vote with fucking Nazis instead of voting for a person who would have at least maintained a semblance of the status quo so that we could keep trundling along.
Well, they're misinformed, they're distracted, they're working 90 hours a week, they're not paying attention. I could go on and on for the reasons why the half that are decent are where they're at. And I just can't hate for the sake of hating. I just can't do it.
And look, I understand it's going to be very important to vote for Democrats in 2018. My congressman is running for governor this year. Tim Walz. I live in the 1st District of Minnesota, which is a mostly rural district. Tim Walz is, he's a blue dog. He's a very conservative, you know, farmer-friendly Democrat. But he's running for governor in Minnesota. Mark Dayton, he's not running for re-election. And Walz is leading he's in the lead for nomination as the Democratic nominee. And trust me, as a moderate Democrat, I will vote for him to be governor this year. And I will vote for whoever comes up, you know, on the D end in my own home, regardless of whether or not this new Democrat is, you know, a blue dog or not. I understand that. It's just getting that message out to everybody else.
Laurel, since we're talking about Minnesota politics, does Tina Smith have a chance at getting elected in that Senate seat that was Al Franken's seat, or is she going to lose, do you think?
Well, thank God Michelle Bachmann ain't running for it.
Oh, she's not. Okay.
God told her no, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, at least God talks to her. I guess I'm not that privileged yet.
If she's the only Democrat in the running, I'll vote for her. I'll do the right thing. I'm not going to like Amy Klobuchar for running Al out of town.
Yeah.
But I'll vote for Amy next time around.
Yeah, I looked at, I don't know if it was the Cook Political Report or something, and it basically listed the Minnesota seat now as a toss-up. You know, this is maybe a week ago. So
here's the thing. You need to understand this. When Al Franken first got elected, remember how close that race was with Norm
Coleman?
Razor thin. It was like 300 votes.
Mm-hmm.
I like to claim that I was one of the 100 or so votes that swung it. you know.
Well, you were.
I mean, it's not like Franklin was a sure thing. Even this last time around, it wasn't that big of a blowout. You know, Minnesota is not a sure blue state anymore.
No, you've got a Republican. You've got a Republican legislature, don't you?
I think you got rid of the Republicans recently, didn't you?
No, it's still a Republican in the House. The Senate, I think, has a slight Democratic edge, but.
Now, I know there's an interesting contrast between you guys and Wisconsin. Your economic growth has far outpaced Wisconsin's during the time that
Scott Walker
Dayton was governor versus Walt Walker.
Walker is pretty much brown-backed Wisconsin.
One other thing, since Wisconsin got brought up, I don't know if you saw this, but you know that great big intergalactic Foxconn plant that's going to go to Wisconsin that made Trump's tiny Trumpy all excited and Snot Walker drooled all over himself over. Remember that one? Well, they've started putting in their applications for their environmental needs. They're asking for 7 million. I can't remember if it's a day per day or per week. I think it's per day. 7 million gallons of water from Lake Michigan per day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not exactly a drop in the bucket. Let me check this real quick.
While you're doing that, Bob, can I add something real quick?
Yeah.
I like Mike. He's a personal friend of mine, and I'm certainly not disparaging him. He's entitled to think however he wants to think. I just can't do it on a personal level. That's all. I just wanted to get that out there.
I understand that. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I just, you know, like I said, I understand where he comes from, because even if you're one of the nice people Trumpansies, you still got in fucking bed with Nazis.
That's true.
Did that.
Lay down with dogs. Yeah.
You really?
I'll be honest.
No,
I'll be honest with you.
Did that.
Of the five brothers I have, they're probably all racist. They may not all vote, but they're all racist. I'll be honest with you on that. It just is what it is. You know? I have to live with that.
Well, actually, they have to live with that because they're the racists, Laurel.
You know? I can drive around just my little town every day and see the devil's diaper, you know, tattooed across some pickup truck or, you know, bumper or whatever. And this is Minnesota. My God. Minnesota of all places, you know, it makes my heart hurt to see that.
Where are you in relationship to Minneapolis?
I am close to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I live down by Dakota, you know, I live down by, you know where Steve King's district is, Northwest Iowa?
Oh, God, okay.
I work in that district.
Okay,
I work in Steve King's district.
So you're talking, it's Trumpansie
yeah,
land.
My county went 2-1 Trump. The county to the west of me that I drive through to go to work went 2-1 Trump. The county in the northwest corner of Iowa that I work in went 6-1 Trump. 81-14 Trump.
Jeez. 81-14. Jeez.
Yes. Yeah.
What the fuck has happened to Iowa?
Good night.
Yeah, by the way, I found it.
Seven million
gallons of water per day.
Jeez.
Wow.
One of the largest relatively clean freshwater sources, or one of the last large clean freshwater sources on the planet.
Mm.
And you know why? And you know why they're going to do it? Jobs. For jobs.
Yeah.
Jobs.
Foxconn's not even an American company, is it?
Oh, hell no.
It's Chinese, isn't it?
Chinese.
Right.
It's where they have the suicide nets.
And here's the fun thing. They gave away the store to get the plant, but the plant needs 7 million gallons a day of water, fresh water. Now, where else were they going to locate that they could get 7 million gallons of fresh water a day? What, across Lake Michigan in Michigan? Okay. But it's not. But the thing is, it's not like those tax giveaways had to be given up as readily and easily as they did. You know, it's just that Republicans hate. They hate our civic infrastructure. They despise it. They want it all sold to the highest bidder. I mean, it's not like Wisconsin was in a bidding war with Idaho. Idaho doesn't have any 7 million gallons of water a day to provide a plant like that. What would 7 million gallons a day water demand, fresh water, do in, say, California? Californians would rise up and say, fuck your jobs.
Yeah.
By the way, as we close out the evening, again, we're going to close out with $120 in fundraising, so that means $320 on Monday, unless outside of the subscriptions, the overnight crew, something dramatic happens between now and Monday. Note coming in from Steve on the Gulf Coast. Address the theory along with the injustice. The Electoral College has been just what it actually seems, a profoundly biased mechanism designed to redress a perceived imbalance. It is, lately, a mechanism of imbalance in its own right. Allowed to function automatically, its purported enfranchising of a common interest, that of the underpopulated, ergo underrepresented state, has been allowed to function anew as a disenfranchising mechanism vis-a-vis the larger, urban, dense, highly representative electorate of the new majority. This, says Steve, is an historical watershed burdened by accident of concept as much as an issue of constitutionality, original intent, or causal effect. That the EC always goes with the original intent is no defense for its member electors having never seen fit to make a decision and to thus be accountable regarding their particular power to affect the outcome of any one election. No decision, other than to express their power to do, in fact, nothing, and therein negate the actual outcome of a presidential election. This is a serious defect, along with the anachronism. Still, on the humanistic side alone, anything so unnecessary can only be doing the work of evil. Damn, that's good. That's cowbell good. And not for being funny, but for being profound.
Profound, exactly. Yeah,
because the thing is, the Electoral College isn't just a gimme. It's not what Trump treats a 12-foot putt like. Oh, it's in the hole. I'll just pick it up. Because the electors, be they Republicans or Democrats, are supposed to do the right thing by the country. And every member of the Electoral College who cast an Electoral College vote for Trump in the Electoral College sold this country down the river, plain and simple. So, yeah, that's a brilliant piece of writing, Steve.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Well, here's the thing. Guess who my favorite president is?
Who?
Eisenhower, Republican.
Well, I'll school you on Eisenhower one of these days.
I understand all of his flaws, but look, he put the interstate highway system into place, and my
Congress did that.
Well, yeah, my dad was helping to build the interstate highway system through town when we met my mom.
Yeah, but Congress did that. Eisenhower suggested it, but no president has ever passed a bill. But
Eisenhower did help defeat the fascists in Europe.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. He's got that going for him.
Well,
I understand MacArthur, he's not perfect. He realizes he's not perfect.
Eisenhower said, working as chief of staff to Douglas MacArthur was like having the best drama coach a person could ever have. And MacArthur said Eisenhower was the best file clerk that the Army ever produced. Those two didn't, those two didn't like each other. So that's pretty much it. By the way, just a couple more TV recommendations on the way out the door. I started watching, and you know, this is, of course, predicated upon you either being fluent in another language or not being annoyed by having to read your television. I started watching one, and I think this is on Netflix, Babylon Berlin. It's a detective story set in 1929 Berlin. And it's proving to be very interesting. And I like the historic, I like the costume stuff. I like stuff that's set in other periods. You know, I was never able to get into what was that show about the guy who made meth? I could never get into that.
I recently discovered. Well, sorry.
The second one is called, and it's on Amazon. The second one's called Sophia, and it's a Russian television production. And I mean, it has exquisite production values, and of course, what we recognize as modern method acting was invented by the Russians, Stanislavski, and the Moscow Art Theater. And it's exquisitely acted. It's got some propaganda buried into it. It was produced with the assistance of both the Russian Ministry of Culture and the Russian Ministry of Defense. Huh, how about that? But it's the story of the Byzantine princess who was brided off to Ivan III, known as Ivan the Great, not Ivan the Terrible, at a time when he was trying to consolidate what we would recognize as the Russian people. At that point in time, he was a vassal of the Great Khan. And again, you've got to be able to be willing to read it, and whoever translated the Russian into the English has some rather anachronistic ideas of what English sounds like or reads like. But it's, oh my God, it's a beautiful production. The sets, the costumes, wonderful, wonderful. Sophia is it. The other one is Babylon Berlin. And now, at 8 minutes past the hour, I'm going to bail out and go and be, based upon a review that Ron and Raleigh sent me, deeply disappointed by Altered Carbon.
Keep an open mind, Bob. That's all you can do.
Well, I'm trying, but, you know, they having read the book, early on in the press releases, they had this line about the protagonist of the storyline coming back to fight, going into the future to fight, to stop something that he fought a war to prevent, and it was a sentence that was written very obviously by someone who never ever read the books, and more's the pity. Because the books themselves are so visual, and the dialogue is so good, and the settings are so profound as far as science fiction making you think about what the future is or could be. They could have just left it alone, but instead they messed with the fundamentals of the structure of the book itself, and ugh.
Nah.
Yeah. So anyway, we're out of here. Hey, thanks, Laurel. Thanks, Steve from Georgistan.
Sorry for being such a downer. I wish the Vikings
thank
had
you,
won.
Bill, thank you, Billable Rick, and thank you for the challenge you put on the table. It helped out immensely. It's great when it's, you know, goose eggs are hard around here, hard boiled. So thank you for creating the impetus, and thank you to Kitty and Steve for jumping in to knock it down some. Again, we will be at 3:20 come Monday unless... But anyway, thanks to Sparky, of course, always for moderating this long-time experiment in a group discussion, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable of Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. It is... Well, it's inspiring to know you're there. It really, really is. And thank you to everybody who helps keep the program going. That is a much smaller number than those who listen to the program. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky in the chat room, as well as Midweek Pinch Hit Utility Chat Room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.